We're back, and the last caller raised a really, really good question that we're going to be asking George in just a minute, and that is the role of the polygraph in criminal investigations. He referred to the people being fooled into taking polygraph tests, and this caller described a polygraph test which he took, which was admissible in court because of the document he signed. Unbelievable pressure this man must have been under at the time. We're going to talk a little bit also about the role of the polygraph in some very big cases, such as the Green River Killer case. And did you know the polygraph played a role in the world 1993 World Trade Center bombing? We're going to find out from George just what role polygraph has played in these cases and what role it has played in criminal justice in the United States, because it's a mighty big role for something that has not really been objectively tested. We have already discovered that there are no tests of polygraphs where a group of operators have all been asked to test the same individual to determine whether or not they came up with the same responses. And polygraph has been around for too long for that type of test not to have been done. And it does need to be done if we're going to continue to rely on polygraph in any way at all. We'll also be taking your calls. This week on Dreamland on unknowncountry.com, we are asking the question, what are we not being told? Linda Moulton Howe has an absolutely fascinating interview with a scientist who worked on that asteroid that recently passed between the Earth and the Moon. And then a witness to an apparent missile launch near Phoenix last May comes back to report on his discoveries since that video was made. Very interesting stuff on Dreamland on Unknown Country this week. Unknown Country offers new news every single day. Our news editor, Ann Strieber, is pretty good at finding really fascinating stories. So don't miss unknowncountry.com. We'll be right back with George and with your calls. This is Whitley Strieber sitting in for George Norrie tonight on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking to George Mashke, a former U.S. Army interrogator and intelligence officer with a background in counterterrorism. He has a website, antipolygraph.org. His book, The Lie Behind the Lie, Behind Lie Detection, is available free as a PDF download on his website. He's concerned about polygraph and the idea that polygraph may not be all that reliable. George, just before we left the air, the last caller was in the very situation that you were describing, and here he was, knowing himself to be an innocent man, and offered the opportunity, or the seeming opportunity, if he took and passed a polygraph, they would essentially agree with him that he was innocent. Only
right, and I think his lawyer gave him bad advice in advising him to agree to that, and that he was lucky that he passed it.
If he hadn't passed it, what happens generally when somebody doesn't pass one of those tests and it is admitted in court? Does it seal their fate, or is it possible for the polygraph to be questioned in court?
The polygraph could then be questioned in court, but it's an additional obstacle then that the defendant has to overcome.
Are there any studies showing its influence on juries?
I believe that there is a study, but I off the top of my head, I don't know the details of that.
Okay, well, let's go back let's go back to the phones. Let's go to the wild card line to Steve in New Mexico.
Hi.
Hi, Steve.
I just want to say I've been a police officer for over 20 years, and I was just going to go over some personal experience that I've had with polygraph and just see what Mr. Maskey had to comment about that.
And please do.
Okay. I've, over the course of my career, I've changed employers three times. I've taken three polygraphs, and I've passed all three. They've been very calm. Each one has been very similar. The questions were asked, and I answered the question and move on to the next one. It's been a very calm, peaceful situation. I've had no issues. So I've had a lot of faith in the machine itself, and I think it works. But I think the variable or the problem with them is the human element. And the reason I say that is I have a close personal friend who did take a polygraph with the FBI or trying to get a job with the FBI, and she had a lot of issues with her polygraph, and what she described she went through was a lot different than what I'd gone through and the tests I'd taken. And she described what was basically what turned into an interrogation, and where the polygrapher became upset with her because of the answer she gave, and was very confrontational and continued to ask her questions repeatedly, basically until he got the answer he wanted. And it was a very stressful situation for her. And in my past, none of my tests were stressful at all. It was a very calm situation. And so basically this went on for over an hour, and until I believe the tests were inconclusive and they weren't able to hire her based on that. And there apparently is no appeal. There's no videotaping of the session. And I think that the real issue there is, if you have a professional trained polygrapher, you're probably going to be okay. But if you get someone who is not professional and has some biases, you may run into problems.
George, an organization like the FBI has an urgent need to know whether or not applicants are truthful. And so does the CIA, obviously, for that reason. But what you're telling us here is the method that they are using to determine this actually doesn't work. Now, is there anything you would recommend that would work?
Well, my first recommendation would be to stop relying on something that doesn't work, because it's not the case that doing something is necessarily better than doing nothing. Again, we've got the example of many spies who have passed the polygraph compared to only possibly one name who might be considered to have been caught by it. There's a CIA secretary who confessed to having committed espionage when she was confronted, and she received a short jail term. But the big ones, like Alder Chains, they all, you know, passed. Anna Montes, the CIA's, the Defense Intelligence Agency, DIA's top analyst for Cuba, was a Cuban double agent from her first day at work at the DIA. She had a 16-year career spying the whole time. Polygraph didn't catch her. So instead of relying on lie detectors, it makes sense to me to rely on traditional investigative techniques, asking about a person's background, maybe checking their finances, and so forth, rather than putting faith into a technology that is known not to work, not to be reliable, like the polygraph. And again, the last caller's friend who failed the FBI polygraph, it's not necessarily because the polygraph operator was unprofessional or wasn't properly trained, the polygraph operator didn't necessarily have any bias. It's just the technology does not work. And so it's not surprising that an invalid test would provide inaccurate results.
What kind of training is necessary to become a polygraph operator?
Oh, you'd think it would be a long procedure, wouldn't you, given the mystique that's been built up around the polygraph. But the fact of the matter is that the longest polygraph school is run by the federal government. It's called the National Center for Credibility Assessment at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. That's the longest polygraph school, 14 weeks. They turn out newly minted polygraph operators. That's something like half the time of a typical barber college.
Oh, my.
George, I've got a hot potato question for you. Do they or did they use polygraphs at Guantanamo? We know what they did use, but did they use polygraphs?
I heard from a friend who was assigned there very briefly that, yes, they did.
Oh, really?
And that, yes, and that they weren't particularly productive. And that's all I know.
And so they went to waterboarding instead. Uh-huh.
They went to torture was not particularly productive either.
Yes, I've heard that, yeah.
You know, what works is building rapport and gaining a person's trust. And that's the one interrogation method that is really reliable.
Mm-hmm, but that one takes time.
A member of my family was an intelligence...
Time and intelligence.
Yeah. A member of my family was an intelligence officer during World War II, and he used to say that some of the guys would slap these fellows around and get nothing out of them, that it was essential that you were their only friend and their best friend, and that was what worked. He said it's just hard to do when you're dealing with a Nazi.
Right. You know, some of the highest-ranking Nazi officers got sent to a prison camp out in the Washington, D.C. area, and the interrogators who questioned them would do things like play chess with them and you know, converse with them, and that's how they got them to talk.
Right.
Not by putting them in stress positions or depriving them of sleep or subjecting them to extremes of hot and cold, the sorts of torture that our government is using now, and I call it torture, although it doesn't necessarily draw blood or leave scars. It's things that we would consider torture if they were done to ourselves. And I've been put in stress positions before for extended periods of time. It is, in my professional opinion, torture, and it's wrong and counterproductive.
Well, exactly, and a person tends to say anything they think will relieve the pain when they're under that kind of stress, rather than...
Precisely. So you get what the person who's being questioned thinks the interrogator wants to hear,
right?
Which is not necessarily the truth.
George, the polygraph has played a surprising role in some very big cases and situations. Tell us about what happened, how the polygraph was connected with the 1993 World Trade Center bombing.
Okay, that's an interesting one. A bombing that might not have happened had the FBI not relied on the polygraph. I can't say that for certain, but the FBI had a well-placed confidential informant in New York. His name was Imad Salem, and he had penetrated the group that carried out the bombing. But the FBI terminated him in part because he didn't pass the polygraph. And so after the World Trade Center was bombed, they immediately hired him back, and they were able to thwart a planned bombing of, I believe, the Holland and Lincoln tunnels under the Hudson River,
and of the United Nations. Those bombings were thwarted because of this confidential informant information. Perhaps the World Trade Center bombing might have been averted too, had he not been terminated, partly because of the polygraph.
Let's go back to the calls. Let's go to the wild card line to Susan in South Carolina. Susan, you're on with George Mashke.
Hi, thank you very much. I've never been polygraphed, but I do have a question that I have not heard asked. If a person such as I, who is on regular medications for things such as seizures, migraines, and bipolar. I have another friend who is on lupus. If any of us were ever on or ever had to have a polygraph, and my parents always taught me to tell the truth, and I always have to the best of my ability, and my husband was in military intelligence, and he is deceased. But would that have any effect on polygraph?
That's a good question. Do psychotropic drugs and drugs that affect things like seizures have an effect on polygraphs?
Well, that's a good question, and there's no clear answer to it because there's virtually no research on the effects of specific medications on polygraph results. So typically what the polygrapher will do is ask about any medication that the person might be taking, and they have no database to check that against to find out what will be the result of this drug on polygraph results. But if the person seems lucid and responsive and alert, then they will go ahead and do the polygraph. There's, you know, a saying that they'll polygraph just about anyone with an arm and a pulse. So the drugs might have some effect, but it's simply not clear. And the practice is to go ahead and polygraph the person.
You know, I'm finding it rather surprising. This is not the first time in the course of the evening that we've come across something which really does call for study, and there turns out there isn't any. There should be a database showing the effects of such drugs on polygraph results, but there isn't, and that surprises me, and it keeps surprising me because this technology has been around for pushing close to a century. Very little changed, with the exception of a system that's computerized, which is still essentially the same polygraph, just with a slightly different control and output system. I'm surprised.
Right.
I'm very surprised.
Well, polygraph methods were largely developed not by scientists, but by interrogators. It's an adjunct to it, interrogation. And interrogators, unfortunately, aren't all that interested in science. They see it as leverage for getting confessions, but they also tend to be. I mean, I wouldn't say that polygraph operators are necessarily so cynical, entirely cynical and disingenuous. They often come to believe that what they're doing actually works. And part of that is because the only feedback they get is usually positive, and that is confirming that the test was right. If they polygraph someone and they fail, then
the practice
is to interrogate.
This is Coast to Coast AM. Whitley Strieber sitting in for George Norrie. We'll be right back. We're back. We're talking tonight to George Mashke, a former U.S. Army interrogator and intelligence officer with a background in anti-terrorism, who founded antipolygraph.org after being falsely accused of deception during a pre-employment polygraph examination with the FBI. He's made a powerful case tonight that the polygraph is not a scientific instrument, and particularly telling in my mind has been the fact that there seem to be very few in-depth studies that support the polygraph. For example, there should be a database that shows the effect, if any, of all kinds of psychoactive drugs on the polygraph process, but no such exists. That surprises me. You can learn more about tonight's show on coasttocoastam.com. Highlights are featured in the carousel on the homepage. There's also a fascinating UFO photo sent in by a listener near Camp Pendleton. Don't miss coasttocoastam.com. Ann Strieber and I will be back on December the 27th, hosting Coast while George is on vacation during the course of that week, just for the one night, December the 27th. Our guest that night will be one of the world's great adventurers and writers, the author of Fingerprints of the Gods, Graham Hancock. So expect a great night that night. We're going to have a lot of fun, and do not miss that show. When we get back, we're going to be talking to George Mashke and taking your calls. We'll be right back. This is Whitley Strieber sitting in for George Norrie on Coast to Coast AM. We're back talking to George Mashke. George's website is antipolygraph.org. You can get his free ebook, The Lie Behind the Lie Detector, on antipolygraph.org. Let's go straight to the phones. We got a load of calls. Let's go to John on the first time caller line. John?
Hi, this is John.
Yeah, hi. What you got?
Hi, guys. I'm going to trial within a month. being charged with assault and battery, whatever. It's an alleged single punch, which never happened. And I'm looking to go to trial. They're trying to get me for 7 years. Anyway, about a month ago, I went to, according to my attorney, go see this guy. He's supposedly a polygraph expert. I saw his pictures on magazine covers. Anyway, I did the test. And the two most important questions, I think, are, did you hit her? And when you hit her, did it cause any injury? And he showed me a graph from a computer that said it was absolutely truthful. I did not. On both of those, it was the absolute farthest left on this computer-generated graph. And I still ended up failing the test. He came up with a score. He said, you have a +4 score. I'm going to consult with some other friends of mine. It was really frustrating. At this point, I'm thinking, I mean, this guy doesn't have the answer on his own. And he said, you need a +5 score to go to the DA's and show him this. And you only have a +4. So he made me wait a couple of days while he consulted with other people and then came back to me and said, let's do a retest. Of course, this is $1,500 plus more. And then on the retest, it was really weird because on day one, he was very kind, courteous, took a lot of time. I was there forever. It was like a 4.5-hour thing. It was too long. But the second time I went in, he did it in about 1.5 hours, and he was very abrupt. He was curt. He was rude. And since I've been alleged and charged with all this stuff, I haven't slept for months. I spent 31 days in jail on a false accusation, and here we go. Anyway, I took the test, and during the test, I'm literally falling asleep, staring at a white wall. There's nothing to look at. I must have dropped my chin to my chest 3 or 4 times, and I'm telling the guy, hey, I can't even stay awake doing this. And he just got madder and madder. And next thing you know, the last thing he said to me was, when guys don't pass this, he goes, when they look like they passed the first time, it looks okay. But when they come in the second time and they don't pass, he goes, you just get dirtier. The dirtier get dirtier. And I was like, oh, my God. And the only thing different on the second test was a new question. Have you ever, before 2009, have you ever been in a fight or hit anyone? And I've never been in a fight, not even as a child. And he said, I even failed that question.
That question was a probable life control question.
and the fact that you had never hit anyone before, and hence answered it truthfully, perversely, that made it more likely that you would not pass.
Now, why is that, George?
Well, because that question before 2009, did you ever hit or deliberately hurt someone? That's a probable life control question. They expect that everyone has gotten into a fight, some kind of, especially couples. So the answer, the denial in response to that question was expected to be a lie. And that would have been, the response to that question would have been compared to the responses to the question about striking the person in the incident for which the caller was criminally charged. So the key to passing would have been to show a stronger reaction to that question about having ever hit anyone or been in a fight before 2009.
Now, it sounds...
Had not been in a fight, hadn't hit anyone, it made it more likely that he would not pass the polygraph.
It sounds as if this polygraph operator had a strong bias against this caller in the second session. Now, why was that?
Sure, it does. Well, it could have been that maybe a friend in the police department told him more about the case, and that made him more suspicious of the caller. That could have happened. So it could have been information from other sources that changed his attitude. It could have been... it's possible that another polygrapher looked at the charts and said, I think that guy was using countermeasures trying to beat the test. Lots of polygraphers think they can detect countermeasures by examining the charts, although no polygrapher has ever demonstrated any ability to do so reliably.
Now, you're saying that a polygrapher could, for example... Before testing somebody, consult with the police and ask their opinion of the person's guilt or innocence?
Sure, yeah.
That's shocking.
Polygraph circles are small, and many of the people who give tests privately are former or retired law enforcement officers who have, connections.
So the polygrapher routinely... knows the opinion of the police prior to testing the witness or the accused?
Well, if someone has been charged with a crime, it's no mystery what the police's opinion is. I'm not saying that polygraph operators, private ones doing tests, routinely seek out personal contacts and ask for information from the investigators, but they can, and that's certainly a possibility. It's one thing that might explain the change in demeanor from the first polygraph session to the second.
Now, caller, are you still on the line? No, the caller's gone. George, what would be your advice to this caller at this point in his case, in his situation? He apparently has not signed a document admitting the polygraph results. What should he do next?
Well, I would hope he has a lawyer, and my suggestion would be to forget about the polygraph and consult with his lawyer and not to talk with the police without his lawyer present. That's the best advice I could give in this situation.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Lisa, east of the Rockies. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Well, we're just fine. What's your question for George?
Well, I was going to ask about the drug effects from the polygraph, and I heard some discussion. But did want to mention many, many years ago, my very best friend, who was 16, along with me, I was in some difficult situations, but did embezzle quite a lot of money from a store, and they were a large franchise, and they brought in the big guns from New York, and she found out they were going to be running polygraphs the next day through her friend that was bookkeeper, and she was a wreck. because she was guilty. But you didn't know what to do, and her mother had taken Valium, and that's what she decided to do, and she had taken a couple of those tablets, and they ran the polygraph, and she was definitely guilty. I worked at the store next door. She was scared to death, but she passed.
She passed?
Absolutely. And she was very gregarious, but she was very calm that day, but you couldn't tell. Just in full, just in very, very, I can remember that day so well, and it's been a long time ago. But I felt badly for her, but she was guilty, but she was, her family was definitely in a bad position, but she never talked about any of that at work, so nobody knew.
George, we know that the polygraph is in, it is used heavily by organizations like the CIA and the FBI, because you've told us so. How extensively is it used generally in law enforcement?
Well, it's not the first resort for criminal investigations. Of course, it's preferable to have physical evidence, things that can be used in court. So it tends to be used in cases where a confession is needed to make the case. And that's a special reason why anyone who's asked by the police to take a polygraph should say no, because, first of all, it's not really a test to find out whether you're guilty or not. It's a pretext for an interrogation, and an interrogation in which your lawyer won't be present, an interrogation that might not be audio or video recorded, and where coercive interrogation methods can be used and have been used in the past. So, again, it tends to be used in cases where the evidence is weak. And I'd recommend to any caller, if you're asked to take a polygraph, refuse. Don't talk to the police. Get a lawyer.
Now, you say that lawyers are generally not present during the polygraph process. Why
during
is that?
The polygraph, they're excluded from the room. And the polygraphers will say, well, it can only be the examiner and the suspect in the room, and any other person in there might, you know, disturb the atmosphere and upset the test. And that's nonsense. The reason that a lawyer can't be present is that they don't want the suspect to be advised of his rights in the midst of questioning.
Well, I certainly, if I ever took a polygraph, you can be, for a legal course, I wouldn't take one. I wouldn't do anything, folks, and you shouldn't either. If you're accused of a crime, you need to have a lawyer there. That's how our system is supposed to work. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Edward on Wildcard Line. Edward.
Aloha. How are you all doing?
Aloha. Out in beautiful Maui.
I'm calling from Maui, Hawaii, and I'm an aging hippie who started my career as a pre-med student at Maryland University in the 60s, and I ended up being at the Pentagon levitation marches and mobilization to end the war and the SDS, and that proceeded into books like, you know, Behold a Pair of Horse, None Dare Call It Conspiracy, The Matrix stuff by John Weir. And then I got over here to Hawaii about 38 years ago, and I got into Ashtanga yoga. And one of the threads through this whole thing was that because of so much oversight and polygraphs that were involved, there was always a rumor in the 60s, 70s, and then when I got here to Hawaii in the 80s, that there were certain yogic, I was supposed to be delicate here, muscular contractions that if they were implemented during questioning would totally skew any kind of questioning under polygraphs. And I wonder if that's part of the polygraph defensive armory.
Okay, George, what do you say?
Okay, I believe the question is whether contraction of certain muscles could be used as a technique for defeating the polygraph.
Right.
And yes, in particular the anal sphincter muscle, because contracting it tends to raise the blood pressure produces a big reaction, and it can't be seen. However, nowadays it's common to have sensor pads on the seats of polygraph chairs, and it's not clear whether or not these sensors are capable of detecting an anal sphincter contraction. They can certainly detect any shift in weight across the chair. So it's like you to press a tack in your shoe. That sort of distortion might be detected by the seat pad, and perhaps an anal sphincter contraction might be too. So antipolygraph.org, we recommend against that technique as a countermeasure now. I would just say if there are more questions than we'll be able to answer this evening, I'd invite everyone to come to antipolygraph.org. We have a message board that's uncensored where you can post your questions, or feel free to email me, mashke@antipolygraph.org, or to call. My phone number is our phone number is on the website too.
Okay, let's go back to the phones and see how many we can get through before we're finished this evening. This has been very, very interesting. Thank you, George, I think, for all of us. This has been quite illuminating and a very enlightening show. I've learned a lot tonight. Connie in the Wild Card Line in East Texas. Hello, Connie.
Hello. it's a great show tonight. I'll make it short. I had to take a test back in the 1980s, and I was always curious. Does the machine, is it able to tell the difference between a guilty person who's lying and an innocent person who's just mad as heck and righteous indignation of having their privacy invaded?
No. The machine is not capable of distinguishing. It can show that a person is reacting, that they're sweating is changing, that their breathing is changing, that their heart rate is changing, but it can't tell why that's happening. And it could be just that the person is furious at being falsely accused or nervous about the consequences of not being believed, even though they're telling the truth.
Okay, so in other words, it's essentially just it's a stab in the dark. Let's go to...
Right. The polygraph can indeed detect reactions, changes in breathing, sweating, and heart function, but it can't tell why those are happening. And you know, these functions that it's recording are not in any systematic way associated with deception. There's no Pinocchio response that people always make when they're lying.
Well, George Mashke, we have come to the end of our time together. Callers, I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody. There were an awful lot of you tonight. Go to George's website, antipolygraph.com. Email him. Go on his message board. You can certainly pursue this further. George is ready, willing, and able at antipolygraph.com. The lie behind the lie detector. Thank you very much from me, from Ann Strieber, and I believe you'll be back with George Norrie tomorrow night.